This is Wireless Mike with EAA Radio, and right now I'm talking to with Chuck Kilberg, and he's one of the 787 pilots for the testing of this airplane. And how is this airplane to fly compared to some of the others you've flown?
Well, it flies very similar to the 777, which is what we designed it to do, because it has a digital fly-by-wire system, flight control system. We can tune it to fly like any airplane we want. We chose not to make it fly like a B-17. We thought a 777 might be a lot more acceptable for our customers.
Yeah, the BA-17s with the tailwheel landing might not transfer very well to a tricycle landing airplane.
Not so good.
So now, how long have you been on this program?
I've been on the 777 and then immediately transferred to the 87 for a little over a year.
And how much time do you have in this aircraft?
In this aircraft, probably 50 hours or so.
And I must have a long education in order to become a test pilot. What are some of the experiences that you've had in order to get to this point?
Well, I started out with an engineering undergraduate degree, joined the Air Force, flew 10 years operationally in fighters, went to the Air Force Test Pilot School, spent my last 10 years in the Air Force testing fighters, came to work for the Boeing Company flying the F-22, and then transitioned into adult airplanes, 757, 67, 37, 777, and 87 over the years, and also spent 4 years flying the C-17 at Long Beach.
So you've flown quite a number of really impressive aircraft, including the F-22. How was that to fly?
Well, it was a lot of fun. Early in the development stages, we were still going through baby steps as I was working through the development of the program and the early flight testing. But it's an incredible airplane, incredibly capable. And I think probably an experience that I'll always cherish, having an opportunity to work on that program.
Now, when you're doing test flights on the 787, what's a typical mission that you've been flying recently?
There is no real typical mission. We're doing the entire span of certification flight testing. Early on, of course, Mike and the people that were on the program very early did the original handling qualities and performance, flutter, loads testing. And now we're just completed all the certification testing. The last phase is what we call functionality and reliability, where we put the airplane through typical airline service routes and assure the certification agency, in this case the FAA and EASA in Europe, that the aircraft meets all the standards for a certified aircraft.
And when you're flying these typical missions, there are literally dozens of chairs here in the back with tons and tons of test equipment. How many people do you normally have on the airplane when you're doing these test flights, and what are they monitoring?
Okay, again, it depends on what kind of flight you're doing. The very initial flights have just a crew of two people because they're considered high risk. We don't want to put anybody else at risk. As we get more confidence in the airplane and the systems are checked out, then we begin to bring more and more crew on board. We could probably have, I would say, typically 20, but it could be as few as 8 or 10. It could vary somewhat above 20 engineers that are here to monitor the systems that are being tested. We might be doing a test of some particular electrical systems or engines or fuel systems, aeronautical mile testing, which is fuel economy testing. So it really depends on what we're doing. We can maintain the weight and center of gravity by shifting water back and forth in these big barrels. We're not actually brewing ale up here, although being from Seattle, it's not a bad idea. They're actually made by a cooperage company in Seattle for us as part of the flight test. And then we can move water back and forth to maintain the center of gravity exactly where we want it. Usually we have to test to the extremes, full forward and full aft, as well as the heart of the center of gravity envelope. So we have engineers here that take care of that. And we also bring instrumentation engineers along, and they're to fix the data systems if anything goes wrong with the data system itself. There's nothing more frustrating than flying 8 or 10 hours and coming back and finding that you didn't get the data. So we've got the people on board to make sure the data systems themselves are working correctly.
So 8 to 10 hour flights, those are some pretty long test flights. What's the longest one you've done?
They just completed an 18 hour plus flight. They left out of Guam and took a rather circuitous route back to Seattle because we had to do an 18-hour endurance flight and demonstrate the maximum endurance at full fuel load. But other flights can be very short. Some are less than an hour. We have a particular configuration to test. We go up and do the test, and we're done. And we have to come back and reconfigure the aircraft, maybe move weights or move other things around to configure differently to do another test. So typically, I would say probably 5 to 6 hour range for a test flight, but there's a lot, certainly a lot that have been a lot shorter than that.
Now, this airplane was designed, it's really a kind of state-of-art airplane using a composite structure for a lot of it. I've heard that leads to being able to have different pressures and also having higher moisture content so you don't have to have corrosion issues. How does that make for a flight experience?
Well, it should make it a lot more pleasant for passengers, and that's, of course, the whole idea. By having the composite structure, we're able to maintain a higher delta pressure between the inside and the outside. That means that at our maximum cruising altitude at 41,000 feet, the cabin inside will be the equivalent of being 6,000 feet, whereas a typical airliner in service today has an 8,000-foot interior cabin. We're also able to maintain more humidity inside. A lot of people will notice if they fly long flights, it gets really dry and they get hoarse or they get sinus congestion. We can keep enough humidity in the atmosphere inside the cabin to make it a lot more comfortable for them. And as you say, the aircraft is mostly composites, and so it will not corrode. And that's not only allows us to run higher humidities for the passengers, but it also eliminates the corrosion control program that's a very expensive part of maintaining large aircraft fleets.
And I suppose the less of the pressure differential or the greater pressure differential, which allows a lower cabin altitude, also makes it more comfortable on people's ears, especially small kids who can't always clear their ears.
Yeah, I can't say it's going to solve the small kid problem. I think they're sensitive to, you know, going up in an elevator to the, you know, the 35th floor of a building. So, it'll make it more comfortable. The rate at which you descend, the rate at which the cabin comes down will be slower. So it's going to give the passengers a better chance to clear their ears.
And what are some of the other unique innovations in this aircraft that people might not be aware of?
For one thing, typical aircraft pressurize their planes using bleed air from the engines, but that takes some of the thrust away from the engine and is an inefficient use of fuel. So on this aircraft, we don't take bleed air off the engines. We actually have electrically driven compressors. We have two very huge generators per engine, and then two more very huge generators on the auxiliary power unit. And they power most of the systems electrically rather than hydraulically or pneumatically through bleed air.
Yeah, does this give you a higher level of redundancy also?
Yes, it certainly gives a higher level of redundancy, but I think the reason we do it is for the efficiency. It allows the engines to do nothing but produce thrust. Prius does the same, you know, Toyota does the same thing in a Prius. They unload everything off the engine so that when it's running, all it's doing is moving the car. And when our engines are running, all they're doing is moving the airplane for the most part. There's a few fuel pumps, etc., but much less tear on the engine, and then we run the systems electrically.
And what engines do you have on this airplane?
This airplane has Rolls-Royce engines. We also have GE engines as another option. We have 64,000 thrust, more or less, and a 70,000 thrust options, depending on the size of the airplane.
And they were coming out with three, I believe, various length configurations. Am I right on that?
So far, we have three that were planned. We're immediately going to finish this test program and go right into testing the Dash 9 version, which will be a little bit longer. My figures are going to be approximate here, but this is about a 270-passenger airplane, and the Dash 9 version will be about a 305-passenger airplane, depending on the configuration, what kind of seats. When I travel a lot, people complain about the seats are too close or whatever. We don't design the seats. We just install them. The airline selects the vendor and the seat pitch and how many they want to have it. So some airlines, like a vacation airline or some of the Asian airlines, are going to put in all economy class seating, or almost all economy class seating. Other airlines will have you know, first class, business class, and economy. Some will just have a business class and economy. So anytime you do that, you have fewer seats.
All right. And anything else that people should know about this airplane or that you would like to share with us today?
I guess I would say that all the employees of the Boeing Company are really proud of this airplane. We can't wait to get it into service. I think once it's in service, if people see how economical it is, we'll have a lot of additional interest. Not that there hasn't been a tremendous interest in the aircraft anyway. Fuel economy is very important to our customers, and I think not only the fuel economy, but just the comfort level of this airplane is going to make an incredible traveling experience for the passengers of our customers.
What is the fuel economy of this airplane compared to some of its competitors?
I think we're quoting double-digit increases, but I really can't give you the specifics right now. In fact, I don't even know them. They're still being analyzed, and we're still gathering data for the final numbers that we're going to publish. I think when the rubber meets the road and it gets out in service and the airlines that are using it start seeing the economies of it, I think that's going to help sell even more airplanes.
But clearly it's going to be the most fuel-efficient aircraft in service when it enters service.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt, right now there's no cheaper way to fly unless you're flying one of these ultralights out here. And I don't think I'd want to go across the water in one of those.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for the information. And we hope you have a successful program.
It's a pleasure to be here, and it was great talking to you.